The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, does God actually make himself known, or are we expected to believe in him according to blind faith? My friend, God makes himself known. The resurrection of Jesus is a fact of history. At least it's as verified as anything else that we accept in ancient history. In addition, we can actually encounter God and interact with him in a personal relationship with his spirit. 1 John 4:13 says, "This is how we know that we live in him, and he in us, he has given us his spirit." When the apostles used the word faith, they meant trusting the God who has already made himself known, trusting this God to work in our lives. They did not mean that we should be following something which may or may not be true. God is concerned with facts, not fantasy. God encourages learning and education, even at the grade level. He supports what we informally, phonetically call the three R's: reading, writing, arithmetic. Of course, there have been three other R's in the news lately, heralded by people who make us wonder how they ever got through grade school. And all three R's relate to who else? You guessed it, Donald Trump. The first R, Russia, as in Russian collusion. That narrative lasted several years, but it has not only been disproven. The attempt on the part of the Obama administration, its Justice Department, the FBI, and the intelligence agencies has been exposed, trying to, as attorney Greg Jarrett put it so well, exonerate Hillary and frame Trump. The second R, racist. When all else fails, call somebody a racist. Now, there's several problems with this idiotic notion. First of all, the very people calling Trump a racist now were friends of his for years. He was the darling of the media, friends with Jesse Jackson, friends with Al Sharpton, friends with the Clintons, friends with Chuck Schumer. I could go on and on. Were they palling around with a man they thought was a racist all that time? Or did they decide to lie after he began publicly expressing viewpoints they did not like and flirting with the presidency? The so-called racist words of Trump do not actually exist. They are instead words taken out of context or read between the lines. When read or heard in context, there is nothing racist about them. Any thinking person can see this, but Trump's enemies are counting on non-thinking people. Another point. Unemployment for African Americans and Latinos is at an all-time low. Whatever the mind readers may want to guess about how Trump feels inside, actions speak louder than words. His actions are certainly keeping his promise of working for all Americans. And then don't forget, many outspoken Black and Hispanic public figures absolutely love Trump and are not shy about showing it. How come they are unable to see the so-called racism? Ask Alveda King, Martin Luther King's niece. Ask Candace Owen, Ben Carson, Larry Elder, Thomas Sowell, Herman Cain, Diamond and Silk, Rachel Campos Duffy, and the high majority of our Border Patrol agents who are themselves Hispanic. And that leads us to the third R, recession. You see, the first two didn't work, so we need a third one. Recession. Because so many Americans will ignore the made-up tripe, and instead look at the reality of their pocketbooks, The economy is likely to get Trump reelected. Joe Biden's drivel about he and Obama are responsible for our present prosperity is not going to be taken seriously. And so Trump's economy puts Trump in great shape for 2020, unless we have a recession. So now the geniuses are predicting a recession. What else would they be doing? We don't have one, mind you, but they know that fear of a recession can cause people to overthink investment, spending, etc. In other words, talk about a recession can contribute toward a recession like a self-fulfilled prophecy. Now, Bill Maher, say what you like about him. He's at least more honest than others on his side. Bill Maher has openly admitted that he hopes we do have a recession. I'm quoting him. "Sorry if that hurts people, but it's either root for a recession or you lose your democracy. Honest, yes, but lacking in other kinds of integrity. Mr. Maher, your so-called sorrow moves me close to tears. A wealthy celebrity such as yourself can easily ride out a recession. Many hardworking middle-class people cannot. And exactly how the re-election of this president will end democracy, I would like to see Maher explain, especially in as much as Trump's opponents continually push for legislation that will erode the First and Second Amendments, push for more rather than less government regulation, constantly seek court rulings to overturn the will of the people at the voting booth. They also want to do away with cars, planes, meat, and now even water bottles. Finally, they seldom, if ever, condemn groups like Antifa, who perpetrate deliberate violence upon those who are not politically correct. Yeah, that's a great track record for the love of democracy. But whatever your view of democracy, Maher is undeniably speaking what so many are thinking. They would rather see our country suffer through a recession than see the re-election of a man they hate. So endeth today's lesson. The three R's: Russia, racist, recession. And now, time to put away the three R's and instead welcome the three F's: faithful, freedom-seeking, Friedenberg. Say hello to National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg.
Good evening, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you.
So, I think the most exciting thing, the thing that I'm most excited about, is the thing that I was really hoping for, and it's happened, Bob. We now have an alternative to President Trump for the 2020 election. Did you hear the news? Joe Walsh, a former Tea Party activist who lost his seat in Illinois and was attacked extensively by the media for using racist comments, is now decided to jump in the race because Trump's crazy.
So that he'll be liked by the media. Yeah, because if you turn on Trump, you're going to be loved by the media.
Oh, no, this is very exciting stuff. I mean, now, of course, I'm not really excited. I really genuinely believe that this guy is a publicity hound. He saw the way Scaramucci was treated when he came out, against Trump.
And
which
he was knows, despicable what Scaramucci
he knows,
did.
He knows simply by doing this, he's going to be on CNN, MSNBC, NBC. He's going to be one of the most sought-after guests, and they're going to love to hear his, his insightful commentary about how crazy our president is. So anyway, it's nothing really to be excited about, but it's just the way things are. He's coming out, and of course, he has zero chance, but he will be a nonstop presence providing negative commentary on the president. So, I mean, we can look forward to that. Speaking of some things that have happened there, you were talking about the recession. And just a couple words about that is our country is now pretty much thoroughly what's called a consumer-based economy. 70% of the economic activity comes from consumers buying things here in the country back and forth. So as you were saying, if you can scare them, if you can spook them, then
start saving your money. The economy's going.
Don't spend.
It creates a spiral effect.
If you do a good enough job, you can scare the consumers into a recession. That's the bottom line. That's all it takes. Now, it's very interesting though. You could tie that into the actions of China. Now, as we all are aware, Trump's been trying to negotiate a better deal on trade for the United States with China, a fair deal. He's also been getting them, trying to get them to agree to stop stealing intellectual property, doing forced technology transfer, all these types of things that the China has been doing since Bill Clinton let them into the WTO. China has been waging an aggressive, all-out trade war against the United States since Clinton brought them in into the WTO. And only when Trump got into the office did we actually start responding and defending ourselves against China. So the idea that this trade war is something that Trump brought on, no. What it is, China was winning an incredibly successful trade war against the United States. Only when Trump started opposing them, though, do you start hearing about the word trade war. Everybody was quiet about it before, but they were doing it. But going back to connect it up to the consumer confidence, so Trump goes over there and about maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he says, you know what, I'm going to hold off a little bit on some of those extra $300 billion in tariffs, because I think, you know, he had to talk with the CEO of Apple, and he's saying, you know, maybe we can do that. I want to, you know, good faith measure. Let's just keep China talking. Well, China just this week came out and dumped $75 billion more in tariffs on U.S. goods, sort of out of the blue, maybe partially in response to Trump's kind of indicating that he's going to be looking at Hong Kong as part of the whole package, you know, whether or not, you know, the trade. So, of course, this spooked the stock market, right? And Trump said, well, okay, well, if you're not going to be negotiating good faith, he brought in tariffs on, he raised tariffs on $550 billion worth of Chinese goods. Now, we've always had the advantage in a trade war with China, kind of ironically, because we've had such a huge deficit. We buy so much more stuff from China than they buy from us. We've been in the driver's seat on a trade war, just the way it works. So that, if you want to look for a positive out of all the negative stuff, that's the one positive there. So this goes back to, because, so it spooks the stock market. Then you've got the inverted bond yield, right? Where the short-term bonds are outperforming the long-term bonds, which sometimes can predict a recession, not 100%. And there's been some debate about how inverted it was. Maybe it was just flat. Maybe it was inverted. So you get these factors
because
together.
Because with a short-term bond, so, people are going to want to sell and cash out sooner.
Well, it just means that it just shows that there's some uncertainty on the long term from all the people that do this kind of loan. I mean, it's a large set of people. When that inverts, there's the thought, there's a collective wisdom that maybe a recession is coming. On the average, if that's true, it's about 22 months out. So it theoretically hit the average. It would be after Trump is either elected or not. But let's go back to China. China sees all this stuff going on, and they decide, hey, we're going to create some more FUD, some more fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And they raise the $75 billion knowing that Trump will respond. That creates a lot of uncertainty. It's a stock market. People in the stock market, they hate uncertainty. They hate it. So when you do that, you see the stock market responding. Now, even though most Americans aren't invested in the stock market, even with 401ks, most Americans aren't, it is commonly held to be a barometer of economic health. Now, that's not true as much as it used to be. It used to be that in Wall Street, that if General Electric or General Motors was doing well, that meant they were hiring more American workers. Nowadays, a company could be doing very well in the stock market, meaning what they did is they shipped all the jobs overseas
exactly.
to China, and they got more jobs. So okay. We'll continue with this topic.
Yeah, hang with me. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined with Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, so as we were talking about the tariffs, what I think is going to happen between now and the election is China's going to do everything it can to create fear, uncertainty, doubt in the American markets. And, you know, the $500 billion in goods. Now, thankfully, the stuff we're getting from China is not food. It's not housing. It's not shelter. But it would be, you know, plastic goods. There's a lot of stuff. Electronics. There's a lot of things that people buy.
So how successful will this be? Do you see the Trump campaign in danger from this?
It's not going to be a positive. How it's perceived and how it's portrayed will be. But
well, and we know how the media is going to portray it. And we know how Rhino Republicans are going to.
Right. And we also know that a lot of the Wall Street analysts that have, you know, just they've been nonstop saying that, you know, tariffs are taxes on the American people. So that, let's talk about that. Let me just finish this one point here that before we talk about the completely bogus idea that these tariffs are impacting the consumer. But let's get back to it. So basically there's $550 billion worth of goods coming into the country from China. And with these tariffs, some of this price may go up. Okay, now, more recently, we've seen the impact China had when it decided not to no longer buy soybeans, right? You probably saw some stories about, oh my heavens, the poor soybean farmers are going to be destroyed because Trump's in a trade war with China. You saw the story. So I believe we're going to see similar stories for other sectors of consumer goods as much as possible to try to create uncertainty about what Trump's doing on the trade, uncertainty on the foreign policy side. And China could do this because you know why China can do this? Because they know when they do that, they have a partner. They have somebody that they can partner with to go after Trump. And it's called the media. The media will latch on to every one of these things, every story. So I'm just saying that we're going to see that between now and the election cycle. Now, we're also something that is not going to happen between now and the election is we're not going to get a trade deal that's worth anything of any value. China, no way can President Xi could not survive. He would no longer be president of China if he were to do the kind of trade deal that actually rectifies the issues that are on the table. If he did a trade table that got rid of China's predatory trade policies, that got rid of their intellectual property theft, that got rid of their currency manipulation, he would be gone as president.
Would Trump have done better to wait till after the election?
Well, Trump has been doing a negotiation, and he was hoping he could get something done. And he also, it's a matter of public perception. I believe that President Trump understands trade. I think he understands this stuff better than I do. I think the people like Larry Kudlow are around him and Lighthizer, his trade representative, these people know what's going on. But you have to pay the PR game. But they know that between now and the election, there is no way China's coming through with a good deal.
How are they going to present it?
Needs to happen here is you slap the tariffs on and you don't mess around because it's the uncertainty. I'll give you a story here. When I was in college, I worked my way through school working with a company called the Southwestern Company. We sold books, educational books. And I worked a lot of summers doing this, you know, thousands of hours. And something I learned, very interesting. I could be in a poorer neighborhood with somebody out of work And I had a better chance of selling a $100 book to that person, big book, very big, by the way, than I did to an upper middle class neighborhood where the wife there that I'm talking to, you know, the mom, is telling me there's uncertainty about her husband's job.
Oh, that's very interesting.
So it's uncertainty. And if
so, if they freeze the tariffs and then no dilly dally,
and if you just do it and just say, here's what they are, here's what the tariffs are, listen, obviously.
But then China goes and makes their tariffs bigger and tries to prolong it.
But they actually can't. That's the bottom line. They've raised tariffs on everything they can just about because it's so unequal. They could raise basically they've run out of goods to raise the tariffs on. That's why we had such an advantage going into it.
How come we don't hear as much about all the tariffs that China and all these other countries have had on the United States and what we've been paying? Doesn't that affect our taxpayers also?
Of course it does. And in fact, when you run a trade deficit actually leads to the reduces the gross domestic product. So it reduces our growth in domestic product. Trade deficits do that. But a lot of people, there is people in Wall Street, people, corporate executives, and when you hear the word trillions, a lot of times it's exaggeration. This is not exaggerating. They made trillions taking millions of American jobs and shipping overseas to places like China primarily, tens of thousands of American business. The worst period of time for this was under the George W. Bush administration, far worse than Obama. Obama was not good, but George W. Bush, that was the worst period of time. And by the time that we hit that big recession after George W. Bush, that was a result of our industry being gutted by shipping jobs overseas and the combination of the housing bubble breaking. The housing bubble sort of hid the loss of manufacturing jobs because they have a similar impact on the economy. But once that housing bubble burst, then you were stuck with an economy that had been significantly hollowed out during those years of the Bushers. So Obama sort of hit a rough time. Now, he didn't do anything. He came into a rough situation economically wise. He didn't do anything to really help it. He did things to hurt it by adding more regulations. Now, President Bush, on the other hand, has done things to really help the economy, being substantive things. So let's go back to this idea of these tariffs being damaging consumers. The former CEO of Toys R Us, a guy by the name of Jerry Storch, has done some what's called consumer market basket analysis. What he did is he looked at what an average consumer purchases over the years, and then he looked at what the maximum impact of all these China tariffs, extra tariffs on Chinese goods, consumer goods coming in, would have on the average consumer. And this guy knows it. Toys R Us dealt with Chinese companies all the time. Toys, unfortunately,
they went out of business, didn't they?
They did, but HBC. But then my point is that he understands the market because they were doing, you know, most of the toys were coming from Chinese companies, sadly. That's where they came from. His analysis came out to be anywhere from 1/10 to 0.2% increase in the cost to the average consumer. 1 to 0.2%. So this idea that these tariffs are going to just, to be a major burden on the average American, it's just a lie. Another analysis was done by a Trump official, where they were talking about aluminum. And he used an aluminum can, a Campbell soup can, which is made out of aluminum. And he pointed out that the cost increase in that can, the aluminum in the can, would be 0.6. So an average can of soup costs about 103 cents. It might go to 104 cents. That's the kind of stuff the American consumer could survive and get through, Bob.
Mike, I wish they'd put you on CNN and MSNBC instead of those other lame heads. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, WNS Electric.
Listen to this customer review of Bob Siegel's novel, Choice of the Lorelei. I saw this play on which the story is based many years ago. Elements of it have stayed with me over the years as it expanded my imagination about how things might have been in ancient times. It was also very exciting to see this story intersecting with the other works by the author. Very different stories, yet linked by a common element. I can hardly wait for more. Choice of the Lorelei, available in ebook or print copies from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
When the Democrats will find out a way to attribute global warming to great music as well. Sooner or later, they're going to get to everything. Say hello again to Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, I came up with a very unique saying regarding global warming. And it's basically simply this. Stop global warming. Don't exhale.
There you go. Well, that's if they could outlaw that, too, I think they would.
The topic that I think that kind of snuck up, and I'm glad I was, I'd seen it, and I just hadn't paid attention. It was called the 1619 Project, and it was New York Times. And
now, why are they calling that? I know what the project is. Why are they calling it 1619?
I'll explain. And basically, it was one of those things I was going to look into, but I'd seen it around, hadn't looked to it. Then my wife said, yeah, you got to really look at it. It's pretty important. So I did. And the 1619 Project, August 14th, New York Times and New York Times Magazine released, I think they did an article, but then in the New York Times Magazine, they released a 100-page piece on the 1619 Project. And this is part of a much bigger effort that's been happening here in the United States. It's the effort by the left. It's what's called deconstructionist, to deconstruct America, the principles of America, and Western civilization was found out. Delegitimize.
Well, they've already done that with our forefathers.
Well, they're doing that.
They're trying to do it with the Bible. Well,
and part of that movement, would you see the, you know, tearing down the statues, all these things like
yes.
that. It's all part of that move here. But the 1619 Project, basically, it focuses on slavery and racism. And what the New York Times is, they took all the people, which they had dozens of people apparently, looking into the Trump collusion thing and the Russia-Trump collusion, and they that desk's going to be very, very much reduced or deactivated. It's not going to happen. And they devoted now, they're going to be using, I guess, to quote, all their muscles, all their creativity, all their empathy to look at the racism of the United States and the racism of Donald Trump from every possible angle. That's the purpose of this project over the next years. And basically the 1619, the way the term 1619 comes from is in 1619 in Jamestown,
the first
20 slaves were brought
yes,
in the country.
The beginning of colonialism,
so
of course.
Just to say, basically the premise is the founding principles aren't those ones you thought about, like, you know, we're all created equal in God. The founding principles of the United States is racism and slavery. When you think of America, think of racism and slavery. That is the organizing principle.
And of course, we had many forefathers that did not own slaves and spoke against slavery, and it was abolitionists who were responsible
for
the Civil War.
It took us until the Civil War to get rid of it. That's remember Jamestown, they brought in 20 plus slaves into Jamestown. That's the premise. The idea is that that's when slavery was really introduced into the country.
You know what bothers me? There are Muslim countries that still have slavery.
Of course.
And yet you don't dare speak against Islam to this politically correct culture.
However, of course,
hypocrisy just reeks.
As far as Western style slavery being introduced into North America, It actually was introduced much earlier, 100 years earlier, by Spain and other countries. Spain in particular, in 1526, had brought in over 100 slaves. They actually revolted, and it helped actually shut down one of their colonies, I think, in the Louisiana area. But so regardless, it doesn't matter, because the point of the New York Times 1619 Project is to lay, basically to focus like a laser on Anglo-based slavery. White, English-speaking people, they are the ones that created slavery, brought slavery in. So don't look at the founding principles, they were just hypocrites. The founding principles were based upon hypocrisy. And it wasn't really until the Civil Rights Movement that when the Jim Crow laws were gotten rid of, when the black civil rights leader showed the rest of America what real democracy is, that is the only time when democracy was even begun to be understood in the United States. Up to that point in time, yeah, it was just words meaning nothing.
Yeah, the millions that died in the Civil War, they don't count.
Well, okay, so that's the premise of it. I've read through a lot of it, and to be fair, there is a lot of, you know, they have a lot of heartbreaking stories about the impact of slavery.
It's a horrible stain on our country, but it's not the whole history of our country. Exactly. That's what bothers me.
And they have, you know, they also have the horrible things happening under the Jim Crow laws. So let's just stipulate right now that the United States has a terrible stain that comes out of a very bad form of
but
slavery.
You know, there's nothing new. I remember being in elementary school in the early 1960s, and the teachers were telling us how horrible slavery was, but they were also telling us what a great country America is. They are not mutually exclusive ideas.
Well, here's the thing is that I think. Clearly, the principles that were espoused by the founding fathers that were put into the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were implemented in a cultural context that there was a very, very mixed view on slavery from various people. And, you know, at one point, for example, Georgia outlawed slavery. They were one of the first, I think they were the first state, Georgia.
That's interesting because they were one of the states that seceded on behalf of slavery too.
But they were still under the control of England, and King George, I believe it's King George, forced them to bring slavery back into Georgia at the time.
Well, also, you know, you never hear this anywhere. There were some black people that owned white slaves. You never hear that anywhere. And it wasn't the majority, of course.
It was a small
percentage. But it happened, and you're never even going to hear that happened.
But the important thing is even though we, as Republicans and conservatives, want to dismiss the New York Times largely, the New York Times is a key influencer, and they have set the course. And this is the course we're going to be seeing going forward. And we'll talk about this more.
Yeah, I'm getting to the point where I put more stock in the National Enquirer than the New York Times. We'll be right back.
Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back.
Skyline Church.
Siegel Show. I'm joined with National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg.
So, continuing with the 1619 Project, as I said, we may want to be dismissive of the New York Times, but it is a key thought leader for the left in this country and the liberals in this country. So,
They set a lot of the tone.
They set a lot of tone. So what I believe this 100-page I downloaded. By the way, if you go online and Google, you do an advanced search and you put in the medium as a PDF and you look for 1619 Project, you can download the full 100-page article on this if you care to read it. It's and as I said, there is some stuff in it that, you know, listen, there's heart-wrenching stories. Slavery is horrible. However, I think the real counter-narrative is that first of all, slavery has existed with every major racial group in the world for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Slavery
and
existed.
A lot of our slaves were purchased from African slaveholders.
Well, that's exactly. But even here in North America, American Indians, long before we even knew there was North America or the Europeans knew there was North America, they had slavery.
Oh, Mike, you can't say that. That's not
okay. But I'm just saying. So, I guess my point is the idea that somehow slavery started with white Anglos is an utterly racist, bigoted, and ignorant viewpoint.
It's ridiculous. And when the ancient Romans held slaves, many of their slaves were Greeks and Jews who were also white. So it's not a skin color thing.
1,000 years before their slavery was introduced, and the slaves started coming in from Africa to the North America. There was slave caravans in the Middle East region. So slavery has been around for a long time. It's a despicable thing. But so what's unique
also,
about...
Also, there is a slave market going on with the cartel that our Democrats are showing no concern about whatsoever.
Right.
With our borders.
Exactly. So the thing is, slavery in the United States, sure, it had its own flavor, its own interesting, its own evil aspects. But there's nothing unique about any particular country having a history of slavery. It's endemic. It's everywhere. What is unique about the United States, England, and Western civilization, unique, is that we led the charge to demonize slavery, to vilify slavery, and to end it.
And there is such a thing as people saying we're not living up to the founding principles of our Constitution, so we're going to conform to it. That still speaks mightily of our Constitution.
Right. So the principles upon which this country was founded are the same principles that led Western civilization, United States and England, to the civilization, that is the people that didn't get rid of it, but significantly tried to stamp out as much as possible slavery, that provided the philosophy and the thinking that delegitimized slavery completely. So, and it also provided the best thinking and philosophy on combating racism. So the founding principles are very relevant. Listen, slavery was a significant part of the formation of our country, but not the most significant. The most significant was the Western principles, ideas, and values that eventually culminated here. So, but it's hard when you take a look at things, you say, okay, Robert E. Lee, by all counts an honorable person, a congenial person, a gentleman, but he fought for the South.
But he fought for the South because he said, if my state, Virginia, gets attacked, I'm going to defend it. He was actually against slavery. Now, there had been a history of slavery in his family, and he was conflicted like a lot of people. But he at the time of the Civil War, he was against slavery and was fighting for very different reasons.
And George Washington many times expressed doubts about slavery.
And his slaves were released according to his will upon his death.
But he didn't release them until he died. So basically, so the point is, if you can tear down statues of Confederate leaders because they didn't completely reject slavery or they had some, then you could do the same thing for Washington. You could do it for Jefferson.
Yeah.
You could do it for
Well, I'd like to see them start with tearing down statues of Margaret Sanger, who believed in eugenics, worked with Hitler's eugenicists, wanted to outbreed and get rid of the black race. Her statues are up.
Well, there's a mindset here, and it's kind of the woke mindset. And I've been analyzing the woke mindset for a while and trying to just break it down to make it concise. You know, where do you get to? Where does this come from? And I come up with the three principles that lead to the woke person in general. I mean, I'm making a general statement, so anybody individually could be different. But the three principles are, one, a lack of self-awareness. Two, moral arrogance. And three, ignorance of history. Let's start with lack of self-awareness, okay? You and I know we both do wrong things, right? We understand our sin
speak
nature.
Speak for yourself, Mike.
Okay. Okay, Bob, I understand. I know that I've done things that are bad in the past, and things that are selfish, things like, we understand
as
that.
All of us have.
And people are self-aware. Okay, so basically a self-aware person examines himself and says, hey, you know, and a self-aware person will say, well, why do I believe what I believe? Okay. A lot of us believe what we believe is because we were raised in a culture where that's the way things are. In fact, overwhelmingly, people believe what their culture tells them. It's the unique person that rises above that is that is not influenced by their culture. Okay. So my question for the people like that is, if you were to be back in a time where you, from the time you were sitting on your mom's lap or feeding your mom's breast or whatever, you were told that slavery was okay, that there was reason slavery is all right, that they had all the rationalization why slavery is okay, and that is how you raised, the chances are 90%+ that you would support slavery.
Which means when people like Washington and Jefferson got older, having been raised that way and had pangs of conscience against slavery and wrestled with it, that is to their credit that they were able to start challenging the way they were brought up.
Exactly. Now, it didn't happen overnight. But the slavery, they can show evidence of slavery going back at least 5,000 years. So an evil practice that had been around for thousands of years, in a very relatively short time, Western civilization banished it. That is the real narrative. Of course, now there's still sweatshops here. We have people bringing in women that are being used, for horrible things, and that's a form of slavery. But in general, we have as a civilization, we have said slavery is wrong.
But I do see from the left much more discussion about the slavery of the past and very little concern about the slavery in the present.
So basically, we get to the point of the moral arrogance. So the person today is thinking to themselves, who has been raised in a society that from day one they've been taught slavery is wrong, right? They think that if they were to go back there in time, that they would have been better than Washington Mirabel. They're that 1% of person that would have sat there and go, gosh, after my deep philosophical self-aware introspection, you know, following Socrates, the unexamined life is not worth it. With that, I would have been that one little tiny percentage of people that actually stood up and opposed slavery. Well, that's what I call moral arrogance, because it's not true. The vast majority of people running around claiming to be woke, if they had been raised differently, they would be believed differently. And that's where the moral arrogance comes from. Then you get to the ignorance of history, okay? Slavery was a very complex issue. Some of the states made it legal. The North, I believe by 1804, made slavery illegal in all the states. William Wilberforce fought a 40-year battle against slavery in England. And the thing about it is, because he was able to persuade England to peacefully get rid of slavery, a lot of the problems we got out of the horrible, vicious, nasty war, the Civil War, I mean, there was a lot of resentment, a lot of dead people out of that, that entrenched some very, very negative feelings about slavery and people of color that we're still dealing with today. Unfortunately, it's, you know, that, and that didn't go away as quickly, and we still got to deal with that. But we, in general, Western tradition and philosophy provides the soundest, most valid philosophical foundation to go after racism, to go after slavery. That is what the left is working to destroy. They're working to destroy the credibility and the power of Western civilization, including the history of the United States.
All right, Mike, hold with me for one more segment. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
It's common in today's uncertain economy to feel apprehensive. After all, the seemingly limitless choices in the housing market can look quite confusing. You might even know people who shared their difficult experiences with the housing market, sometimes losing money instead of what they hoped would be a simple and profitable procedure. Well, here's the good news. Realty Executive All Area is here to help. Our track record is proven. Listen, Since 1994, we've sold thousands of homes in the San Diego area. What may seem like an obstacle to you is just a challenge for us. We thrive on multitasking and achieving goals. When faced with opportunities or unique situations, our level of determination goes into overdrive. We're confident we can use our skills to attend to your personal needs.
You can reach my friend Fred Valduti at 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717.
Or fredfalduti.com. That's Fred, FALDUTI.com.
Reader enthusiasm for the dangerous Christmas ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism, because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh, as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. You're listening to Bob Siegel and Mike Friedenberg.
So I think that we need to combat this current effort to purge anybody from any period of time that, you know, wasn't as enlightened as on the issue of slavery or racism. We need to come back with a better argument, but it's history. I'm sorry. When I hear the arguments that it's history, as they tear down a statue of a Civil War general, or it's history as they tear down the Robert E. Lee, and they say, well, you can't do it because it's history.
And they won't stop there. They're talking about tearing down statues of Lincoln.
Right, right.
The guy that was okay. That abolished slavery.
But the bottom line is the argument that it's history is incredibly weak. It's so weak it just should never be made. There's no way that we want... You know, one of the most influential characters in history in the last 100 years is Hitler. Top 10, probably.
Right.
We don't want a statue of Hitler. We don't. So the thing is, the bottom line is we have to be able to defend these people whom the statues are on more than the fact that it's history. We have to say, listen, okay, we have to have a deeper conversation. Okay.
We have to say people have gray areas in life.
These people were flawed, imperfect people. They were part of their culture of their time. They excelled in certain areas and rose above their fellow people in that area in certain areas, but they didn't rise above completely. Let me ask a question, Bob. It's a question I think that you, with all your years of education, will probably be able to answer. Is in the history of the world, can you name one person that was able to rise completely above how they were raised and above their culture and not be influenced by it, and actually just see things as they truly are?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Okay. Okay, so Bob, that was
You almost
good.
Had me stumping. You were talking about my knowledge of the history of the world, because I think, do you mean Mel Brooks' History of the World Part 1? Because I don't think he ever made a Part 2.
So, Bob, so there's one person that would meet their standard. And if they'd been back then, once again, I go back to this. If they'd been raised in the same culture, these same people are tearing down the statues. If they'd been raised in the same culture, the odds are... they would have thought the same way. They would have had the same struggles. George Washington had some struggles. First of all, there was a couple things that's legitimate. People who freed their slaves freed slaves in those areas were often, in fact, it was a thriving trade. They were captured and pulled into slave states.
Exactly. And so, you've got to argue whether all those slaves necessarily wanted to
be put in that position. So I can tell you that the slaves under George Washington were treated far better than many slaves were in the South. Okay, so let's just... Now, that doesn't mean slavery...
Although, technically, he was the South. That was Virginia.
I know, I understand that, but I'm just saying... right, you're right, because that's true. But so he used that. There was the rationale that... the people of color could not look after themselves. That was a wrong, but that's what people thought. They thought they would not be able to look out for themselves. And then, of course, underlying all this thing is if he had let all his slaves go, he would have been financially ruined. Now, all that stuff means that as a human being, he was factoring all this in his head. He was rationalizing, and he was raised a certain way. That is what the human experience is. Nobody other than Jesus Christ can perfectly separate themselves from that.
Well, you know, there is one silver lining here, Mike. If Washington and others who own slaves, if we're going to get rid of everything with their name on it, that'll be the end of the Washington Post.
Yes.
That's not as good as the New York Times, but that'll be the end of the Washington Post.
And then, of course, none of the founding fathers believed in women being able to vote.
Yep, and that would be next.
Yeah, I mean, Benjamin Franklin, who actually was pretty remarkable on the slave issue, he actually just flat out came out and became an abolitionist in there. Now, we had a lot of abolitionists. So there was a very mixed bag in the colonial America on this area. It was outlawed in 1733, I believe, in Vermont.
And, of course, John Adams never owned a slave. You got to remember that, too. A lot of our forefathers who were against slavery never owned slaves at all.
So this whole thing that the New York Times is pushing is it's shallow. It's not really, because they're leaving out so much history and to focus in one thing, it's inaccurate. And really, all it's going to do is create more racial division.
Well, and isn't a lot of it motivated against Trump? Granted, there's an onslaught of against Western civilization that's existed anyway that Trump is upsetting. But a lot of their motive is just to get Trump not reelected, too.
That may be the reason they're putting it together now, but there's a bigger agenda, which is the attack on Western civilization.
Yes, exactly.
But they certainly, we're going to stuff that New York Times is leading on in some of these articles. We're going to hear experts will be brought on CNN. They'll be brought on all the major, and so you'll see them on Fox talking about how our history really isn't about, being created in the image of God and treating people. It's really about racism. I mean, we're going to see that happening coming forward. So one of the questions I do like to throw out there, because I think I know the answer, but and maybe I'm wrong, but I think I might be right on this, is I ask people, if you look at all the major advances in human rights over the last 300 or 400 years, 200 years, 100 years, where did they come out of? And I think, certainly the West was at the forefront of eliminating slavery and creating the and vilifying slavery and explaining why slavery is morally evil. But what about women's rights? I think that probably came out of the West too, didn't it, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. It came out of the West.
So is there a major advance in human rights that you can't really link back to Western civilization?
Yeah. I mean, it's just such nonsense. And it's not history, it's historical revision.
So, to me, that's the other thing that you need to say here is we're talking about an effort to deconstruct America as one of the principal advancers of Western civilization in the last few hundred years, and deconstructing Western civilization. We need to fight back against that and say, no, the United States is not unique because it had these problems. It's unique because it became part of the solution to to addressing these problems.
We are the greatest country of the world, and where there's greatness for error as well. All right, Mike, provocative as always. We will see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.